o'clock Monday, looking at the Gemara on Ayin Hey Ayin Vav, and I wanted to look just a little further, just the part relevant to Tosfos. Doing a little cherry picking, not because I want to cover up anything, but just because it would take a long time if we were going to do every part. If you go to Daf Ayin Vav Amud Aleph, at the two dots, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Hamachlith Para B'Chamor U'Mashach B'Chamor Asapara. So what are we doing? We're swapping a cow and a donkey. How do you swap a cow and a donkey? Well, so one of the basic things you should be aware of in halacha is that if I'm buying an object from you and I give you money, the transaction is not complete. Right? The din is that kesef is not kone by metaltalin. Why? Some say it's a din daraisa rish lakish, var Torah mos anaf konos. The accepted position, however, is that of Rabbi Yochanan, that var Torah mos ar konos. Really, when I pay the money, it's binding. But the reason why they made it not binding, they allow either party to back out, is because we are afraid that something will happen to the object in the interim. Let's say I'm selling you wheat, you give me the cash, and now the fire breaks out in the hut that the wheat is stored in, and I say, look, it's not my wheat, it's not my problem. And I don't bother to extinguish the fire. Shema yomer chitecha misrafu ba'aliyah. And therefore the Chachamim said that a party has the right to abrogate a sale that took place when only the cash was paid, until Mashiach and the object was actually done. There is, of course, a stipulation there, which is that if you back out on a sale when there's nothing happened to the goods, if something happened to the goods, they were damaged, then you back out without any penalty. If, however, you back out when nothing happened to the goods, you just change your mind. Let's say the price went down. I bought a cow from you, and a cow, when I bought it from you, was worth $100, and now somebody, China floods the market with cheap cows, and, fed on chemicals or something like that, and, other kinds of toxins, and now the cows are only worth $80 on the market. So I figured, hey, I'm not a fool, said I'm going to back out of this transaction, and now I'll buy another cow for $80, and I'll save $20. So the halacha is that I'm allowed to do so. Obviously, it's immoral. But the stipulation is that I have to accept the curse, a mishapara. A mishapara, the nusach of the mishapara is that the one who extracted payment, the one who punished the dor hamabul, and maybe the dor palaga, kahu asid lipara mishaina omedidibura. And so too God should extract punishment for one's people who don't keep their word. Okay? So basically you have to decide whether you want to curse yourself with that harsh curse, or whether you wish to just be an honest fellow and let this transaction stand. So that din, however, is only by kesef. When we do mishicha, the halacha is that whenever I do mishicha on an object, the kinyan is binding at that point. And if we're doing a kinyan, so if I'm moshech the para, at that point I owe you $100. If lightning now strikes the cow, I still owe you $100. If the cow drops dead of a heart attack, of an unexpected heart attack, an undiagnosable heart attack, or some freakish occurrence that was totally unpredictable and unknowable, then I still owe you $100. It makes no difference. If we are doing an exchange of a para for a hamor, so obviously the only way to make a kinyan there is when one party, theoretically you could require both parties to make a kinyan, we don't. As soon as one party does a kinyan mishicha on one of the animals, the other animal transfers reshus to the other person. Okay, so that's the basic, that's what's known as kinyan halipin. Kinyan halipin. So now, the Gemara says as follows: Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Machlit Para B'Chamor, U'Moshech B'Chamor Sapara. I own a donkey. Moshe owns a cow. Moshe and I decide it's time for a swap, so Moshe brings his cow here, and I take the cow, and I Moshech the Para. I pull it along, and maybe if it's a big cow, he hands me the reins. It's a kinyan mesira. Doesn't really matter. It means mashach bala hamar sapara, means I make a kinyan on an object, right? Kinyanim metaltalim have three general forms of kinyan, which are mishicha, mesira, and hagbah. picking it up, pulling it along the ground, or hagba. We discussed this a little bit when it came to Akam Levi the Rabbi and Ganav something b'Shabbos. Ganav Tle, it must have been a Tle or something. What did he steal on Shabbos? Ganav Kis b'Shabbos. So now what happens? So I am Moshe's para. Now he comes to my corral to take the chamor, and it's a dead donkey. The donkey dropped dead. So obviously, what's the question? When did the donkey die? If the donkey died before we made the kinyan, then the kinyan's an invalid kinyan. It's a kinyan betos. If, however, a moment after I made a kinyan on the para, the donkey dropped dead. So then, the para belongs to me, and Moshe has a dead donkey. That's just the way it is. So, what's the din? So the Gemara says, Shmuel says, Al bal hachamor lahavi raya shehaya chamor okayim b'shas mishichas para. I have to prove that the donkey was alive when I made the kinyan. Now, when you look at this particular case, explain to me from both angles, why would you say that I have to bring a raya, and why would you say that Moshe has to bring a raya? Daniel?
Well, on the one end, you would need to bring a raya. You're the one who's the donkey died, or you're the one
who... I'm the one who owned the donkey.
Okay, so you would need to bring a raya to prove that you didn't sell him the donkey, or at least the transaction didn't go through when the donkey was dead.
Okay.
On the other end, he needs to bring a raya to say that when he made the purchase of the donkey was dead, or at least the donkey was deformed to some level.
Why? Why? I'm asking you, explain both. What's the argument on either side? That's what I'm asking. That's a correct factual statement. But what is the argument? Why would you say he has to bring a proof? And alternatively, why would you say that I have to? Not what I have to bring a proof for, but why would the burden of proof be upon him, and why would the burden of proof be upon me? It can't be upon both of us. It's only upon one of us. There's argument for each side. Adin?
You'd say maybe the fact that the Baal HaPara hasn't done Mashiach yet, although maybe we reshoot to the Baal HaPara once he does Mashiach,
no, because if you were right, then it wouldn't matter when the lightning struck. Even after we made the Mashiach, if you're saying that the transaction isn't finished until he makes a kinyan, a Mashiach on the Achamor, then you would be right. But the bottom line is, we know to make a kinyan chalipim work, you only need one party to do something. As soon as one party does a Mashiach, the kinyan is completed. The only shaila is, when did the donkey die? Benny, you wanted to say something?
I was just saying that the para is in your rishus now, so I guess if he wants to be close to that para, you would have to swear.
Okay, so that is one way of looking at it, except for, so what's the problem with that, though? See, it's interesting. I would not intuitively have thought that the question is that of the para.
The problem is that Moshe doesn't have the donkey.
No, I know, but Benny is saying that I'm the muchzak because I have the para. I don't think that that's anybody formulates it that way in the Gemara. I have to read again. And we're not going to look through every detail there, but that is a possible look in. But why do I think that that's not the case? I think it's not the case because what we know that I was Moshe the Para, but we're questioning whether the Mashiach was valid at all. In other words, it's not that my Mashiach was Vadai good Mashiach, and now we're questioning whether or not we could undo it. We're questioning the entire premise of whether the Mashiach was valid. It really has to stem from looking at the perspective of the donkey. Yaakov, what were you going to say?
I was going to say something similar to Benny.
Ezra?
I don't know why Benny would have to. I mean, why Moshe would have to.
Okay, but explain why I would have to.
You would have to because it's dead now and there's some sort of chesed meat on it, or because of a kan su kan
hayukon. Okay, so that basically one side is to say shar shari shar shachet lefanecha. In this case, it's a chamor, right? In other words, the donkey is dead, right? What's the alternative, Mati?
Like a chesed seduf on the donkey up until
yeah,
that point.
The donkey until last check was alive. There's a very I wasn't going to say this, but. You know, Danny, apropos to our conversation during lunch, a very, you want, if you're ever looking to either say Shir or say a Vordover, really fascinating, it's a huge, huge taz in Yoridea and Hilchos Avelos. I had the Shaila once came my way. And a person is discovered having died. They don't know when the person died. The body is discovered a certain amount of time later. So the Shaila of Shiva and Shloshim is not a Shaila. Shiva starts at the time of the burial. Shloshim starts also at the time of the burial. But the question is, when is the Yortzeit? When is the Yortzeit? The first year, anyway, there's a machlokes achronim when you celebrate the Yortzeit. Is it 12 months and a day from the kavura, or 12 months and a day from the death? But everybody agrees that after the first year, the Yortzeit is on the time, day of death. Question is, you don't know whether the person died. They were discovered, they were last seen alive on Shabbos. It's Thursday, and they discover the body. So the question is, do you assume that they died the moment before you found them, or do you assume that they died the moment after you last saw them alive? Now, and it's a given here that the coroner cannot give you any information. In other words, there's no scientific evidence, or the scientific evidence may narrow it down between a certain period of time. The question is, do you impute the death to the beginning of that time period or to the end of that time period? What's going on here? So instinctively, and what the Shach says, and I think we accept this, the Shach says that, of course, you assume that the person died at the last possible moment. Why? Because in a Cheskas Chayim. The Taz quotes a number of rayas, and the Shach responds in his comments in the Kudas HaKesef. But the Taz cites a number of rayas that when it comes to a Baal Chai, since all Baalei Chaim are eventually going to die, you can't say that the Cheskas Chaim holds true as long as you don't know. The Mishnah in Gittin says that there are three people who are Becheskas Chaim and three people who are Safek. If you hiniach someone who is a Zakein and you go Limdina Sayam, or he goes Limdina Sayam, his wife can continue to eat Truma if he's a Kohen, I'll smach that he's still alive. However, the Mishnah says there are certain cases, if he's a Chola, you know, under certain circumstances, you can't assume that anymore. So that's true, the Taz says, as long as we don't know what his status is right now. We assume the last thing that we knew. But once you discover that the person has died, when do you attribute the death to? So the Taz says, since Baalei Chaim or Al Asidim Lomus, you only go back to the last moment you knew that he had to have been alive. Again, whether you saw him that way, whether the coroner says he couldn't have died more than 3 days ago, the Taz says that the coroner says he died between 3 days ago and 3 hours ago, the Taz says you assume that he died 3 days ago. And the Shach says, no, people have a Cheskas Chaim, and only when you know they're dead is that chazaka undone. So one could have said that the chamor has a cheskas chayim. On the other hand, you could say that the chamor is now dead. And therefore, maybe we assume it died after the last possible moment someone saw it alive. Intuitively, I would have said, so that's like a, not quite a kanim sukan hayu, somebody was saying, you were saying kanim sukan hayu? Oh, I'm sorry, Ezra, you were saying that. But Harei Shor Shachot Lefanecha. In other words, the Cheskas Chaim has certainly been undermined now, because the Chamor is dead. But, on the other hand, the Chamor was alive, we last saw it. So, in this case, Shmuel says that the Baal HaChamor has to prove that his Chamor was alive. Okay, this is really, as you can imagine, you could probably spend months on the topic of Chazaka. I don't want to spend months on Tav Chazaka, and I don't know enough right now to spend months on Tav Chazaka. But you could read, this is, you know, major halacha all over Shas. So now the Gemara goes on. Is there a question? So now the Gemara goes on, and the Gemara says, if you turn to Ayin Vav Amud Beis, there was a fellow, Yechezkel, who had two sons. His famous son seems to have been the lesser Talmud Chacham, at least one gets the impression in Shas. That was Rav Yehuda bar Yechezkel. That's Rav Yehuda Rav's Talmud, I believe. However, he had another son, whose name was Rami. Rami's not so common, but he seems to have been, at least when we hear presented, he's the one who usually gets the upper hand. In fact, so So the Gemara here says the following. If you go to about 11 lines from the bottom of Ayin Vav Amud Beis, after analyzing and dissecting, Rav Yehuda's position, and having a fair degree of difficulty fitting it within with a certain brisa about holes in cows' stomachs, which I'll explain in a moment. So you get Ela, it's where the little circle for Kivager is. Ela ki asa Rami bar Yecheskel Amar, lo titzayisinu lahani klali l'kai l'huda achi mishmei d'shmua. Don't listen to any of these rules my brother quoted in the name of Shmuel. You just know what he's talking about. Hachi Amar Shmuel, this is what Shmuel said about the case of the Chamor and the Parah. Remember, the beginning of the sugar was Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, that's the Stam Rav Yehuda. The Yecheskel says my brother got it wrong. Shmuel said, "Kol shenolad nolad safek brishuso alav haraya." Kol shenolad safek brishuso. So Rashi explains, "Al bal hapara lahavi raya shemesa chamor kodem mishicha ho over safek brishuso nolad shlonimsa chamor meis adlacher mishichas para." That Benny, I thought, is that what you said? Somebody said that earlier. Somebody said that very explicitly. That now the Baal HaPorah, in other words, when the Mashiach, not exactly, but when the Mashiach took place, at that point, as far as we knew, the Chamor was alive. Now, you want to demonstrate that it never actually, the Mashiach wasn't valid, the Baal HaPorah has to bring Araya. So what are we suggesting here? We're suggesting here that the Well, I would say the following. We're suggesting that if you want to collect your para, your para from me, you have to prove that the chamor was dead. So now the Gemara says the following. Mesve, vitana tuna kala. The example for that is kala. What was kala? Shmuel holds that whenever the bride wants to claim he claims that wherever the bride is, whatever rishus she is, it's really kan nimsu kan hayu, whatever rishus she's in, so that's the person who has to bring the raya. If she's still beveis aviha, then it's incumbent upon the father to bring the raya. If she's beveis bala, it's incumbent upon the bala to bring the raya. So now the Gemara asks a question. Meisve, machat shenimtza ba'ovei beis hakosos. Turn, go up a little bit in the Gemara to about 10 lines from the top of the page, because there the Gemara quotes the full braisa. You just need a few facts here. Machat shenimtza ba'ovei beis hakosos. If you find a needle in the wall of the beis hakosos, which is one of the four stomachs of the animal, I think it's called, if I'm not mistaken, is it the omasum or is that the other one? I forget what the other one is. No, that's the masas. That's the hemses, is the omasum. I forget. It's one of the stomachs, one of the four stomachs. And mitzad echad, if the needle hasn't pierced both walls of the stomach, meaning it's pierced one, but it's embedded in the thickness of the stomach, but the hole doesn't cut all the way through, then kshera, the animal's not a trefa. Mishnei tzadim, if the needle goes all the way through, it's a trefa. Nimtza alea koret dam, if you find a little thing of blood, biyadua shehu lifnei shchita, then you know that the needle pierced it before shchita, and the animal's a trefa. Lo nimtza alea koret dam, biyadua shehu lachar shchita, that the needle pierced the stomach after it died, and anything that happens to an animal after it died does not render it a trefa. Yes?
Just question. Does the needle have to go straight through if there's a hole over here and a hole over here?
I don't think it matters. The diagonal doesn't make a difference. It's the same thing.
Okay.
Now, the Gemara says, and here's the important point. Huglat pihamaka, if there's some type of scabbing or something like that on the wound, on the hole, biyadua sheshlosha yamim kodem shchita. You know that the needle, that went through the stomach and rendered your trefa happened at least 3 days before Shechita. Otherwise, you wouldn't have gotten that healing, that scab. However, lo huglad piyamaka hamotzi mechavero alav haraya. So huglad piyamaka, we know for sure that this is what? A mekach ta'us. Now remember, mekach ta'us does not have to involve deceit. Nobody knew that there was a needle in the animal's stomach. Obviously, the animal probably had eaten it in its feet or something like that. No one knew that the animal was a trefa. The seller did not know the animal was a trefa. Nonetheless, if there is a scab, so then the halacha is that it's a mekach ta'us. Not because anybody's a bad guy. I sold you something. It turned out it was defective. Doesn't require deceit. Doesn't require rishus or dishonesty. You have to refund it. You have to refund it. So, however, if there's no scab, so then we're not sure when it took place. It could have taken place after the sale or before the sale. And we have no way of knowing that for sure, assuming that the shechita took place within 3 days of the sale. So we don't know how long ago this happened, that it happened before or after the sale. So the Braisa says that hamotze mechavero olav haraya. So what does that mean? So the Gemara, so now go down to the bottom again. The Gemara wanted to infer hamotze mechavero olav haraya meant that ve'id lo yahiv tabach dome bal habehema boy le'suye raya umapik. We would say, we should have said, it sounds from the Braisa that the Gemara is going to reject this in a moment, but you need to realize this so when you read Tosos, you understand what Tosos is saying. Presumably, Amotze Mechav Araya means that if the Tabach, the guy who bought the behemoth to slaughter it, hasn't given the money yet, so then he doesn't have to give the money. Unless the seller can prove that the animal wasn't a trefa until it got into the Tabach's Rishus. Obviously, if he had given the money already, then the Tabach has to prove that it was a trefa before it got into his rishos. So the Gemara says, no. And I asked, if that's true, amai, sveika birshus tabach is yalid. Compare this to the guy who's, to me and Moshe. Moshe and me, right? I am Moshe his para. Once a Moshe his para, we find the chamor dead. And the argument here is who has to bring araya. Who has to bring araya? Under all, the din happens to be under all circumstances, Shmuel says, he has to bring the raya. Misha nolad birshuso hasafek has to bring the raya. And even though, Benny, even though the meshicha was a meshicha mefukpekes, it's a questionable meshicha, it doesn't matter. Because at the point that the safek was nolad, it was at that point presumed that the chamor was in Moshe's rishus. That chamor that is now dead, he has to bring a raya that it was dead earlier. So the question is, if, in fact, the tabach takes the behema, shechs it, and finds that it's a trefa, where was the safek nolad and whose rishus? When the behema was in his rishus. In which case, if he wants to not pay me the money, the Gemara thinks, you would think that olav, that it would be his responsibility to bring a raya. But the way the Gemara wanted to be medayik in this braisa, hamotzi mechalav haraya, is talking about in all cases. If Moshe hasn't paid me the money, if the tabach hasn't paid the money yet, then the seller has to prove that it wasn't the trefa when he sold it. If the tabach paid the money, then the tabach has to prove that when he bought it, it was already a trefa. But according to Shmuel's principle, as Rami Bar Yecheskel laid it out, the suffix was nolad when the shor was in the rishus of the tabach. And if that's the case, the tabach should always have to bring a raya. So why does the Braisa say, hamotzi mechaver olav haraya? It should be the tabach has to bring a raya. So the Gemara's answer is, the yahiv tabach dami? No, the Braisa is talking about a case where the tabach paid the money. That's the only case. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? How do you know that? Umay Piska. Why do you assume that? The Gemara says, Stamad de Milsa, Kamad de Leyav in Ishuze, Leyav in Ishchayusa. If you don't pay me the money, I don't hand the animal over. So what the Gemara says to defend Rabbi Bar Yecheskel's reading of Shmuel is that the brisa that says Hamotzeh Mechavel of Haraya, it happens to be talking about a case in which the Tabach already gave the money. The Tabach already gave the money, and if he wants to get the money back, he would have to bring a Raya. But the truth be told, he would always have to bring the Raya. There's the Braisa wasn't addressing every case. The Braisa was addressing this one case, which is the normal case, where the Tabach buys the behema, pays the money, shechs the animal, discovers that it's a trefa. We're not sure when the became a trefa. The Tabach, if he wants to win, Hamotzeh Mechaver L'Haraya. The truth is, the din would have been the same, even if the Tabach hadn't paid the money yet. It's just that's not the typical case. That's not what the Braisa is talking about. And that's why Shmuel says, when I am Moshech the para, that Meshicha is a Meshicha Mefukpekes. You know why? That shouldn't count. You know why? We're questioning whether it was a Val Meshicha. You know why Moshe has to bring the Raya? Because it was no Lad Birshuso. Because when I was Moshech the para, at that point we assumed that the Chamor was his, and now the Chamor is found dead when it's his in Rishus, he has to prove that the Chamor was dead earlier, under all circumstances. And in that sense, it wouldn't matter, by the way, it wouldn't matter if I was Moshech the para, and then I asked Moshe to watch it for me, to hang on to it for me, until I came back and got my truck to carry the para away. It would make absolutely no difference. He's chayv to prove that the Chamor died before the Meshicha. Okay? Now, is this case, let's say, now let's go to the case that the Gemara implies but does not discuss for Rami Bar Yecheskel. Let's say the Tabach did not pay the money yet. And he shechs the animal, he discovers that it's a trefa. What's the din here? And we don't know when it became a trefa. What's the din?
When he discovered that it's
a... The Tabach did not pay the money yet. He buys the shor, he shechs it. It turns out it's a trefa, but we don't know when it became a trefa. What is the din according to Rami Bar Yecheskel, as the Gemara explained it? The Tabach doesn't say that. So the Tabach has to pay. Unless he proves that the trefa was there earlier. Who is being motzi from whom at this point? Who is being motzi by the Tabach and the Mocher? The mocher is being motzi maos. Nonetheless, we say, because the suffix was no lad bishus hataba, we say that despite the end, I, the mocher, let's say I'm the mocher now, do I know when it became a trefa? No! Nobody knows. Am I a bari or am I a shema? I'm a shema, and nonetheless, the chazaka that the animal was born not a trefa, that chazaka overrides the tabas cheskas mamon. This din does not apply when the animal's trefa turns out to be it has three legs. I mean, actually, if the animal turned out to only have three legs, there's no mekatos at all, because unless the tabach is blind, okay, because you could see it. But if you find a trefa that is congenital, obviously it's a mekatos. We're talking about a trefa that would be nolad potentially later. So the halacha is that the chazaka that the animal had of not being a trefa, there's a famous gemara in Chulin. Famous gemara. Behema b'chaya b'cheskas idus isra medes ad shivada lecha b'mehuchshara, b'manishchata. And then, kevan shenishchata b'cheskas heter omedes ad shivada lecha b'menitrefa. When a behema is alive, until you know that the shechita was vaday done properly, it's b'cheskas nevela. It's no good. B'cheskas iser. Once you do the shechita, in other words, if you do the famous case, you do a shechita on the knife, after you do the shechita, you pull the knife out, and you discover that you checked it before you did the shechita, but it was perfectly smooth. You ran your fingernail over it, no pigamim, no nicks. After you do the shechita, you find that the knife has a nick. The question is, did that happen while you started the shechita and it passed the shechita, or did you perhaps hit the spine after you finished going through the simanim and that was poging the knife? So the halacha, I believe, is behema is an avela. Why? Because behema b'chayeh b'cheskas isri medes ad shiyavad l'lacha b'meh hushara, b'meh nishkata. So once you did the shechita properly, now you find that there's a hole in one of the, you know, something, but you're not sure whether the hole happened before or after the shechita. there's a grounds for suffering, it's becheskas heter until you know that it became a trefa before the shechita. So that's the basic principle. So this behema, even when it's born, has a cheskas not being a trefa. I sell it to the tabach, that chazaka, even though when he shechs it, he discovers that it is a trefa, and it's that, and we say that Israele chazaka, the chazaka is now weakened, because now it's no longer. It certainly was a trefa when he shechs it. So that chazaka, albeit a weakened chazaka, even though I don't have a tainas bari, I, the seller, cannot say for sure it wasn't the trefa. I have no idea. Nobody knows. That's enough to override the cheskas mamon of the tabach. Alex, a question? Comment?
Yeah, so if it's, so when we say that becheskas trefa is becheskas
beta,
so that means that it's as if there is no
suffix. Correct, until unless you can be mevarer. Correct. The statement is on Aftesa Mer Aleph. Amar Rav Huna Behema Bechaya Becheskas Isser Medes Ad Sheivad Lecha Bame Nishchata Nishchata Becheskas Heter Medes Ad Sheivad Lecha Bame Nitrifa. That's the clause. Okay. This is a little bit of a tangent, but I'm going to ask it anyway because this is such fundamental Yesodos and Shas. Did everybody hear Alex's question? He said, one second, this chazaka overrides Sveika Doraisa. So that's incorrect. Let me ask you a question. Is it possible to have a woman who is a Safek Mekudeshes, Minat Torah? Metzger, where are you? If you don't know the answer to this question, I'm going to tell you to stop doing Daf Yomi and start doing Chazara. Now, just in fairness in defense of Chaim, if I hadn't encountered this sugya many times and had time to chew on it and digest it, I may not realize it either, but it's one of the most important Yesodos and Sveikos and Chazakos. It's a sugya in the third parak of Yevamos on Daf Lamed Beis, I think. It's a famous sugya. Famous sugya. As Rabbi Cohen would say, even anybody who's never learned Yevamos knows this sugya. Okay? It is very hard to construct a Safek Mekudeshes or a Safek Megureshes. Why? Because there's a chazaka. If we have a case, Zarak Lakidushin, Safek Karov La, Safek Karov Lo. Min HaTorah, she is single. Why? Because she is a Cheskas Panuya. If a woman is Vadai married and you throw her get, and it's a Safek Karov La, Safek Karov La, she's married, Min HaTorah. Why? Because she's a Cheskas Eshes Ish. The Gemara in that famous sugya has a Havamina, what's known as Trei U'Trei. Supposing two witnesses say Karov Lo, and two witnesses say Karov La, Rabbi Yosef had a Havamina, maybe a Shita that's rejected, that's a Sveika Doraisa. That if you have two Eidim that say one way, and two Eidim that say the other way, because you have Eidus Brua, not one and one Eid, two Eidim and two Eidim, two Eidim obliterates the Chazaka. The Chazaka goes poof, and you're left with two Eidim against two Eidim, that's a Sveika Doraisa. The Gemara ultimately rejects it. The Gemara says that even Shrei U'Trei is only a Sveika Darabanan. Min HaTorah, you follow the Chazaka. Probably the only way to get a Sveika Doraisa is when you have a situation that's indeterminate, and indeterminate in the sense that there's a we don't know, we have no prior knowledge of what happened here, and there's a 50%, you have a piece of meat. Supposing you had a storehouse which had nevela, chelev and shuman in it, or nevelos and ksheros in it, all mixed up, and it's 50-50, and you pull a piece out, that's probably a sveika d'oraisa. But why? Because you can't look at this piece and say what its chazaka was. I don't know if that's even a great example, but if I have a situation where someone has a status already, and then something happens which might change that status, if it's a genuine suffix, min HaTorah you follow the chazaka. Midrabanan more often machmir to treat it as a suffix. Okay? That's really a crucial nekuda. So when I tell you the hema b'chayeh b'cheskas iser omedas ad sheivad lo b'chanishchata, it's not a suffix. It's not a suffix. Min HaTorah, it's vaday nevela. Until you mevarer that it was a proper shechita. Okay. Danny, yours. No. You're holding a thing up. Okay. Fine. Now, so let's just review again what the Gemara seems to say about this chazaka. You have the behema has a chazaka of being becheskas kashrus ad sheivada lecha b'manitrafa. Right, the Tavach shechted the animal properly. It's not a shaila of nevela, of an animal which died without a proper shechita. The shaila is the animal of a treifa. We don't know when the treifa happened. Now, in this case, we know it's a treifa. The only shaila is when it happened. The Gemara Chulin I was quoting you says, we don't know when it became a treifa, we don't know whether it is a treifa or not. Here we know it's a treifa. He shechted it, the Tavach does the bedika, he finds a needle in the thing. There's no question, and he sees a kore dam, so he knows it happened while the animal was alive. Right? You have the indication of bleeding, which you wouldn't have if the needle pierced it after the thing was dead. So, you have a chazaka that the behema was not a treifa. Until the last possible moment. The chazaka was israeli. The word isra, the root is resh ayin ra'ua, to be undermined. The chazaka has been undermined because now it is a treifa. Were, now, you don't know, your tain is only a tain Shema. It happens in the Rishus of the Tabach, that's where the Leidas HaSafek is. The Tabach has a Cheskas Mamon. So we say, because the Rishus, the Safek, was no lad Rishuso Shel Tabach, after he was Moshech the Behema, therefore we say he has to bring the Raya always, and even if he hasn't paid the money yet, I, the seller, can be Motzi the Mamon from him with a tain Shema and my weakened Chazakah. Because in principle, when he did the Mashiach, he owes me the money now. He still is Mochsak on the Mamon, but it doesn't matter. Now, let's come back to our case and our Gemara for a moment. Now, we are learning Daf, third Perek. We're learning Daf Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. Okay. Having gone on a tour of one of the interstellar spaces, you know, the interstellar regions of Shas, so now we come back to Daf Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. So you have a girl who's a chereshes. She marries a man, and he comes and says, "L'matzasi levitcha besulin." And here I don't care whether the kiddushin or kiddushin daraisa, the father was mekadeshar when she was a ketana as chereshes, or whether or not she was mekadeshes herself or something when she's a gdola and kiddushin rabbanon. It doesn't really matter for the moment. The husband has written her a ksuba. By the way, ksuba for a chereshes, if you're learning Daf Yomi, it's optional. It's, I think, Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, I think, in Yevamos. The reason why Ksuba for Chereshes is optional, and by the way, you should realize that, because one of the Rishonim, it's crucial for knowing that piece of Bikiyos for the Ramban's last Teretz, I think. One of his Terutzim. I don't remember. One of his Terutzim, the Ramban, you have to realize Ksuba for Chereshes is optional. Why? Because the Chacham, what's the purpose of a ksuba? Shalote kala bein avlotzia. That's usually the reason. But here, the Chacham had a bigger concern. If you have a ksuba attached to her, people are less likely to marry her, because she's already less desirable for marriage. The Chacham wanted to remove any impediments to marriage. There's no chi of ksuba by yechireshas. He writes her a ksuba anyway. Okay? Gets married. Yeah. Learn the Gemara. The answer is no, he can't. Well, complicated. In principle, he can't, because he doesn't really know what he's doing. In fact, they say, Cheresh finishta minispakeach.
What is Rishim need to give her?
Well, no, because his kinyan might not have been good kinyan. What the Gemara does suggest, Rava pointed out, one of his predecessors was married off a Cheresh and wrote an expensive ksuba. And he said, why was it? Rava said it was brilliant. Svara, why? Look, if the guy needed simply a shifcha to be mishamishim, We would have served as his guardians, his apotropsim, and paid the money out of the estate to have someone to take care of him. So now he gets both a shifcha and a wife in one package deal. So he said, "Who is his wife?" I forget who it was, but mi chacham, you know, like so and so. Was it Rami? Was it Rami Bar Chama maybe, or somebody? Somebody, Rava said, was a real chacham to figure out to do that. So in principle, if the apotropsim see it as being relevant to write a ksuba so as to get the woman to marry him, then yes. But in principle, he's really putter, because if he does it on his own, he's not a bardas to do so. Look at that gemara. Yes.
In the Shudra and other, you know, forms of similar types of women, do they also have an optional ksuba?
So the complicated thing in the Ramban, which he doesn't address, is that, and it's a problem in our sugi, it's not a problem in the Ramban, there is no marriage for a shota. Mm-hmm. that the Gemara in the opening on the bottom of Kuf Yud Beis and Beis, I think, the beginning, the opening Amud in the 14th parak asks, and we mentioned this the other day, why would the Chacham Masakin Kedushin for a Cheresh but not for a Shota, and Shota? And the answer is because a Cheresh and a Chereshes can live in a marriage. They may be low functioning, but they can be Shalom Beinahem. But when it comes to a Shota and a Shota, Ein Adam Dar Bekfifa Menachash, you know, they're unpredictable. People cannot live a balanced life with them, and therefore the Chacham were not Masakin at all. So I don't really understand, as he could write Iksuba, but that's like an IOU of some kind. It's not a marriage. So I don't know what the Gemara means here, unless it means that if a man and a Shota, or a Shota and a woman, decide to live together like they're married, and he writes her Iksuba, so even if the Kiddushin aren't recognized by the Rabbana, you don't require a get, maybe there's still Tainus Pesulim, like any contract. Right? If any contract. I mean, Lahavdil, if a man hired a Zona on the condition that she were a Besula, and she weren't, presumably it's Mekach Tovs, right? He's an idiot, but, you know, thinking that, but whatever, you know. But the bottom line is that would be Mekach Tovs. So maybe that's, I don't know if that's what the Gemara means. So there really shouldn't even be, Shota shouldn't even be in the Parsha here. Shota shouldn't be an issue. I don't know why it's here. Okay. So, take this case again. You have a Chereshes. She's born being a Besula. That's a cheskas gufa. Now that she gets married, and he tainus that she wasn't, and let's assume for the moment we believe him, it's factually true. The crucial question, of course, is what? When did she become not a besula? So, here, the natural tendency, of course, is to say, as recently as possible. But nonetheless, Israele chaskasa, her chazaka has been undermined a little bit because sharei shor shachot lefanecha. She's not a besula anymore. When we taina that she should be entitled to collect the ksuba on the basis of what? On what basis did we say she'd be allowed to collect the ksuba if she's not a besula?
Because she can't have the chaska that she was in the first place.
What would her taina be?
Misher
astani nanasti, or better, Rashi's problematic, but better, mukaseitzani, tachtecha. I became a mukaseitz after the Erison. So, is that taina's baria taina shema? Shema! She's not claiming it. We're claiming on her behalf, even though we don't know for sure. Correct. Chereshes. We have a taina shema. The husband is mosak on the ksuba. So what you have here is the exact same case, at least so it seems. The tabach is mochsak on the mama, the husband's mochsak on the ksuba. The mocher has a taina shema, maybe it became a trefa after I sold it to you. The chereshes has a taina shema that we're making on her behalf. It's shema because we're making it on her behalf, which is maybe she was lost her besulim after she married him. The behema was born with chazaka of not being a trefa. It could be an animal could be born as a trefa, but very few animals are. So there's the chazaka that when it's born that it's not a trefa. She is born with the chazaka of being a basula. Each chazaka has been undermined. What's the din by the case of a tabach? You can be motzi the mamon from the tabach based upon this cheskas hagof of the behema. So to here you can be motzi the ksuba from the husband on the basis of her cheskas hagof. Okay. That's where Tosus is going to go with Rashi. So now that we said that, let's take a look and actually read Rashi, read Tosus. So let me just review very, very quickly one more time, because after having given that introduction, that's the really, truly interesting Shas part of this sugya. The part that we're going to get bogged down in a little bit now is how to read this very local sugya and what the Gemara went when it said, Ha Rabbi Gamliel, Ha Rabbi Yoshua. So let's just review for a moment what Rashi said. We have one brisa that according to Rashi says that a chereshes has knas, and if you say a chereshes gets knas, what are you assuming? She's a cheskas being a psula still. It also says, according to Rashi, nobody else has this girsa, that yesh la tainas psulim. What does that mean? When the husband comes and demonstrates that she either claims or demonstrates, without getting to that question, he's believed that she wasn't a besula. On that part, he's believed. So he has a taina there, and she would potentially forfeit part of our ksuba, all of our ksuba. She stands on the losing end. Yesh lo tainas pesulim, if he claims either with proof that the sheet had no blood on it, or with tainas pesach pasuach, if that's when that's valid, that she was not a basula when he first was intimate with her, he's nemon and he wins. We have another braisa that says that a chayreshes ein lo tainas pesulim, which means what? Right, there's no assumption. Well, so it's not. There's no assumption. What he has no right to, if he discovers that she's not a basula, he has no right to have any tainas or complaints. Why? So Rashi, how do you resolve this theory? So Rashi says as follows: the crucial point is that we are going to assume that a chereshes, even though she cannot say mukaseitzani tatecha or misherastani nanasti, namely that something happened to me after we got engaged, if Averson, after we were misarsim, even though she can't actually say that, we are going to taina, we are going to view it as if she said misherastani nanasti or mukaseitzani tatecha, meaning it happened after Averson. But the question is, does it matter? So Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer say that if a woman says Misherestani Nanasti or Mukas Eitzani Tachtecha, she is Ne'emenes. She's Ne'emenes. Rabbi Yeshua says she's not Ne'emenes. What is the Machlokas about? What is the Machlokas about? So the simplest explanation, and I am digesting the Gemara on Daf Yud Beis and Daf Yud Gimel, the simplest explanation is that it's a Bari Vishema, and there are two Chazakas that cancel each other out, and therefore, Rabban Gamliel says, we believe her. We believe the Bari. You should be aware, again, another major Shas principle, it's quoted there on Daf Yud Beis and Amud Beis. If I walk up to Yudi and say, you owe me $100, and Yudi says, I don't know. I don't remember. Did I borrow money from you? Did I borrow from you? What's the din? It's a machlokas amorayim. I'm a bari, he's a shema, but he's got something going for him, which is? He has chazaka on his money. We paskin, like the amorayim, the pair who say, bari b'shema, bari, la bari adav lahotzi mamon. Okay, but Rabban Gamliel would say in this case, you have a cheskas mamon of the baal, you have the cheskas besula of the isha, and therefore, her bari overrides his shema. Chazaka cancels chazaka, and bari overrides shema. Rabbi Yeshua would probably say that the chazakas do not offset because one chazaka was Isra, namely the cheskas pesulim, because she wasn't the pesula when he first consummated the marriage. Therefore, Rabbi Yeshua says that the bari v'shema la bari adif, that cheskas mamon wins. So, in our two cases, by two brises, by the chereshes, we're very simple. If you say like Rabbi Yeshua, Yesh lo tanis besulim, she loses her ksuba. Why? Because even if she had said with full knowledge, Misher astani nanasti, or Mukas eitzani tatecha, Rabbi Yeshua says we still wouldn't believe her, he would win. And Rabbi Gamliel believes that she is Ne'emenes, and therefore we act as if she had said, Misher astani nanasti, or Mukas eitzani tatecha, and therefore, Ein lo tanis besulim. Ein la tainas pesulim means he can't have any tainas against her. She wins. That's the way Rashi wanted to explain the Gemara. Yes, Yaakov.
What are the thresholds of Bari and Shema?
Meaning, it's quantum. Bari is, I am certain. I mean,
I can be certain about a lot of things.
You can be wrong, but you can. Bari means I potentially have the knowledge to be making this claim, and on that basis of that knowledge that I purportedly have, I am making the claim. Well, no. If I could lie, but let's assume for the moment I'm not intentionally lying. If I see something with my eyes, I'm a bari. If I think something probably happened, or I don't know, actually, I wasn't there to witness it, then I'm a shema. She knows for sure what happened to her. He doesn't know. Unless he brings witnesses, he will always be a shema. He doesn't know if she's a mukaseit. He has no way of knowing whether it happened before the erison or after the erison. She knows. She doesn't always know, but it's likely she has a way of knowing. Right, if she takes a shot, you know, to the groin area, and then she discovers bleeding, right, and the doctor says, "Well, guess what? Your hymen's not there anymore." She's a bari. You're gonna have a lot of bari v'shema. When I'm arguing with Yudi here, I know I loaned him $100. He just has no recollection. He doesn't deny it. He said, I don't remember. That's a Shema. Yes?
How could the Parashat be a Bari if she's not even claiming it? We're claiming it.
She's not a Bari. We'd say it's not Bari.
Oh, she's not a Bari.
It's not Bari, but we treat it as if we make the claim for her. Tosis's point will be, it's a Taina Shema. Well, no, which is really what the Gemara is asking the question. Heichan d'tana, the Gemara turns around and asks the question, where did Rabban Gamliel say that? Heichan d'tana ihi, when she actually says it. But here, she doesn't say anything. So the Gemara says, no, we do it on her behalf. It's technically not a bari, but we advance the taina anyway. We treat it like a bari. We treat it like a bari. And that's why Tosis feels compelled to try to prove that there is such a thing. And that's based upon the Trefa case later. John.
Shema's not only that I don't see it, but it's also that I don't know that I didn't see it.
What do you mean?
Meaning, if you came to and said, I lend $100 to me, and I said, well, I don't recall that happening.
What do you mean by, do you recall it not happening? Meaning, you're sure you never did it, or you just don't remember? You do so many transactions, you don't remember who you borrow money from. It's the latter. In other words, sometimes, if you don't remember, that's because it didn't happen. In other words, if you know that you almost never lend money, so you wouldn't say, oh, I don't know. You would say, no, I never did. It means if you are not certain. Okay. So anyway, now let's take a look at, with that backdrop, let's take a look at Tosfos. Who would like to read Tosfos for? Sure.
We didn't really finish it in Seder.
That's okay. We're not going to finish it in Shir. How far did you get?
Not too far.
Can I ask? Why should we assume that a Kanabari is... why should we not assume the person's no gay at the Dover? One person's always say that I'm sure you owe me $100.
Look, we can't... Listen, normally if you walk up to someone and say, I'm sure you owe $100, the person's going to say, what are you talking about? Never lohi dvar me'olam. Right, so again, you're always worried about is a person going to lie or something like that, but it's not enough. If you walked up to me and said, you loaned me $100, I would look at you and I would think and I would say, I never borrowed $100 from you.
Right. I'm saying, in the case of Bari and Shema, what? Meaning, you. Why should we assume that his carries more weight if anyone will always want $100?
Well, again, I think the reason why we don't assume people lie when a taina is Bari is because. Typically, if the other person, if it weren't true, the other person would probably know so.
Not even lying, I'm just saying be more assured of their position. Meaning, I would be more vehement about what happened, or I would be more sure that it did happen if I, why would we assume that means that my...
It doesn't, but again, that's always the way it works, right? People advance tainas depending on the circumstance. Normally, the assumption would be that if I'm towing something that wasn't, the other person connected is going to be kofar. And that's the end, it's kofar about kol, and that's the end of the story. Okay. So why don't you start, and then you can tell me when you want to stop, and I'll ask someone else. Perish bakuntras. Okay.
So if she was lucid, she'd be able to say such a thing. How can we give this such a taina?
To taina shema in order to be motse mamon kevan.
Given the he lo tana the cheska skufa is right.
So you go into kevan the ihi lo tana because she hasn't made the claim, and now further. The cheskas gufar israi, her chazak cheskas aguf has been undermined. The have, or should be the rei, right? Shor shachal lefanecha is a metaphor. Means the shor is dead in front of you, and she's not a basula, and she wasn't the basula when they had bir rishona. Aval, yeah, the chazak cheskas mamon the baal that's still intact. The kasha lerei. I'm sorry. Miu may be raya. Sorry.
Miu may be re-raya. Lefi hakuntras da amar
the perish hakuntras.
The perish hakuntras. There are perik hamadir. Lo huglad pi hamaka hamotz mechaver alav haraya.
So the din is that if it's a suffix, when the Beis HaKosos was pierced, and the Braisa says Hamotze Mechav El Avaraya Umefaresh. Dafilu lo yahiv tabach dame al hatabach. Right, no. Even if the tabach hasn't given money, al hatabach lahavi raya. Okay, so the Gemara, by the way, never doesn't spell that out black and white, but it's clearly the implication of the Gemara. In order to make for Rami Bar Yecheskel not to have the Braisa conflict with Shmuel, you have to say the Braisa is only talking about a case where the Tabach paid already, and the Braisa says Hamotzei Mechav El Avaraya. But that's the case, the standard case. But the din would have been the same. The Gemara says, even if the Tabach hadn't given the money, it's just not what the Braisa was talking about. It wasn't talking about that case. So Tosfos says, you see from that even though the Tabach has not paid money, he's still mechuyev to pay despite the fact that it's a suffix. So Tosfos says, that's identical to this case. Now, that's one piece of that Gemara. So that we've already explained. Now there's a second part. Go ahead. So remember the stira. The stira was, if you find the mumen after Erisin when she's beves aviha, so the father has to prove that the father who would collect a ksuba right now, Mina Erisin, the father has to prove that the men weren't there before Erisin. That's not a mekach tos. If, however, the husband brought her into his house, then the husband has to bring a raya that the mumen were there before Erisin. So the Gemara wants to know why. Why should there be a distinction? The bottom line is, all that matters is did the mumen happen before or after Erisin? And if we discover them after Erisin, either we say, since they're discovered after Erisin, he has to prove they were there before Erisin, or we say that even though they've discovered Erisin, she has to prove they weren't there earlier. There's no reason to distinguish between whether she is Bershus Aviyah or Bershus Baila. They're both situations are after the Erisin. It should be upon the same party, whichever one you want to pick, to bring the Raya. That was the Gemara's Kasha. We spoke about Monday. That was the Stira, in the two, what the Gemara perceived as the Stira, two halves of the Mishnah, and there were three Terutzim. Rabbi Elazar said, Tafra. The Mishnah is a Stira. It's a Machlokas, Rabbi Galil, Rabbi Yeshua. It's split. And then there were two other answers that were given, and Ravashi's was the second of the three, second of those two answers, the third answer. And one answer was Kan Nimtzu, Kan Hayu. And that was Shmuel's position, that whoever's Rishus, the suffix was no lad. Was it Bershus Ha'av or Bershus Ha'bal? But Ravashi gave a different teretz. What was Ravashi's teretz?
Reisha manav la'ava b'yadacha, seifa manav li b'yadacha.
So the case of the Reisha is when basically it's the father's ksuba to collect. So it's really manav la'ava b'yadacha. The father is trying to claim the money. In the seifa, it's manav li b'yadacha. So what's the difference between these two cases? So Tosis is about to say, so what is Tosis says, Lomitam.
Lomitam Dabari Vashem Abari Adif, Kidimashma Lefusra Rihita.
Lefumriata. You can't say that the reason why she wins but not the father against the husband is because of Bari Vashema. That's not, even though it's mashma that way, lefum riata. What does lefum riata mean? Lefim arutza. Right? Rahat is Aramaic to run. In other words, in a quick run through the Gemara, it sounds like it's bari v'shema. Tosus says, can't be. Yeah, how, if that were the case, in our sugya, how could we be towing on behalf of the chereshes? We're at best a shema. In other words, in that scenario of the bride collecting, it can't be that a bari can collect but a shema can't, because if that were the only obstacle to collection there, we allow shema to collect in the sugya. Why not say it? Now think about that sugya for a moment. Let's apply. We've spoken about a shor.
Of course.
Sam.
He still has
marks. Going to save the day. Danny, somewhere on my desk. pause it? How do you pause it?